Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is faster, smarter, and better email marketing automation. DotMailer is trusted by thousands of leading brands around the world. You can start your free trial today at dotmailer.com/futurecommerce and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off applicable DotMailer packages. Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce, rated as one of Forbes' top six podcasts worth your time. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian.
And I am so excited because today this is episode 50. The big 5-0. And it's a huge milestone for us and a huge milestone for you, our listeners. So thank you for listening. And the best way that you can keep in touch with everything that happens after episode 50 is by signing up for FC Insiders.
Yes, please. you will not regret it.
give me a little bit about what FC Insiders is about.
FC Insiders is the best place to hear about what's happening in commerce and tech. And you're going to get, you know, access to exclusive content before anyone else does. And Philip had an unbelievable article on the future of the internet that he did for FC Insiders. It was the first episode of its kind that we've done. I'll be doing one this month. So if you enjoyed Philip's content, get ready because I'll be doing something very similar and we'll be doing one of those per month. So subscribe. If you haven't heard the article that Philip did and it's something you can listen to or read, I highly recommend signing up for FC Insiders because that is worth your time.
Awesome. So yeah, thank you so much. We're really excited about it. So make sure you get on the Future Commerce Insiders list and get all that exclusive content. You can do that at futurecommerce.fm. Today is a day of days in that we're going to take you on a little bit of a journey back over the last year in the last 50 episodes. And we're going to talk about sort of the transformation over the last year, some of the guests we've had on the show and some of the themes that have been repeated over and over this last year.
I'm excited because this is a really big episode.
So just what has happened? 50 episodes, 1 year. What are some of the main themes that have come over and over? Number one, we have assembled a crack team of thought leaders and retail futurists. Our guests over the last 50 episodes have been the best of the best and the people that are they're at the bleeding edge of commerce.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's a pretty eclectic group.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they all have a very unique view. I mean, if you start to pit some of our guests' views against each other, they're pretty diverse. It's a pretty interesting set of you know, visions of the future. And, you know, if you take someone like Sukarina Mapuru and, you know, if you, you know, juxtapose her against maybe Asaku Panathiratne, or some of our other guests, it's quite an interesting contrast. So we'll dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, and you'll later. Get to hear from them as well. And one of the things that we bring to you every single week on Future Commerce is a healthy dose of thought leadership. And it's not just coming from us. It's coming from the experts in our communities that are helping pushing retail forward. And part of that is helping us to hit some really amazing achievements. And so we want to kind of cover a few of those. We want to toot our own horn because we're really excited that in just a year's time, you, our listeners, and really are this incredible base of support that we've received from the retail community has helped us sort of propel into an area of thought leadership. And so we're doing some great things right now. And I really feel like a lot of that started with our co-podcast, the cross-podcast experiment that we did with Jason and Scott.
That was a great episode. Yeah.
And you'd have to go back and check that out. But they had us on the show and we had them on our show. Right, Brian?
Yeah, it was a two-part series, and it started on our show and then continued on their show. And we kind of had them on as sort of retail analysts, and then they kind of had us on their show to talk about what's next and also a lot about Magento, since we're both really involved in Magento.
Yeah. We kind of got pigeonholed on the Magento thing there. And then we've actually launched recently a series called Future Proof with our friends over at Software Advice, which is a Gartner company.
Really great series. Yeah. Like, unbelievable information there. I really love that quote about augmented reality and SMB.
Yeah.
What was it? 34%?
34% of 34% of small to medium-sized businesses consider augmented reality as critical to their business in the immediate future.
That is a stat worth taking to the bank. If you're not in that 34%, you should really pay attention to it.
And if you're thinking, to yourself, what does augmented reality have to do with commerce? Then
you need to listen to our show.
Yeah, well, yeah. Listen to our show, number one. Number two, head on over to softwareadvice.com and find the Future Proof series.
Yes.
and dive in. So part one is already live. By the time you listen to this, I'm sure there will be some future installments. And again, like, one of the best ways to not miss that is to check out FC Insiders, which is a community that we launched just a little bit ago that's starting to really make some impact. Like Brian said, it's not just exclusive content. It's that we are doing deep and thoughtful analysis on the state of retail today and then sort of unfolding what we feel like our version of the future looks like. And so, you would have found out about the Software Advice partnership right there on FC Insiders. We can't encourage you enough to sign up for that. But the whole thing started almost a year ago when we joined IBM as part of the IBM influencer team at NRF. Right, Brian?
That was a really key moment. You know, we collaborated with them. We had four of their influencers on, including Amber, if you include Amber Armstrong in that group. And that was a really big moment for us. I think that sort of led to us being able to collaborate with NRF and come to the shop.org conference, which was a really big moment. And that was just this past fall.
Did a live podcast, in the middle of the show floor with people walking all around and right in the middle of the expo. So
you could sit down and listen to it.
And we were attracting people. Like, people were coming up and like, what is going on? And just blowing their minds with not just the quality of the guests that we had, but I think also for people to hear a completely different take from new voices and sort of this retail pundit community that is spun up around these types of conferences. And that actually, that sort of, that event was not the first, but it was the fourth live event that we did in 2017.
That's true.
And so we started the year, Brian did a series of podcasts live at NRF. We joined with Magento, and with a podcast called Mage Talk, and we did, Future Commerce Live, at the Magento Imagine Show in Las Vegas in April. And then we did two live events, in September timeframe. And that was, IRCE and we presented live at a meetup.
I can't say it was entirely unexpected, but it's been really exciting to be a part of this community and help be a voice in the community. I think we've been really able to kind of be a little bit of a new voice and talk about what's next. And that's been fun.
So it wouldn't be a podcast if we weren't trying to get out there and get some attention. And so we were not surprised, but pleased to see not once, but twice in the past year, we've earned some distinctions. So it started off earlier in April when the Forbes Tech Council voted us as one of six tech podcasts that are worth your time. And that was a really awesome distinction.
And that was an awesome distinction. We also were just rated one of the five best retail podcasts for consumer brands by Kerry Masters from PopSled Marketing. that was also really exciting that just happened this past week. And we've made, you know, I've seen us hit other top five, top 20 lists on Twitter and really stood up next to podcasts that I really admire. You know, and Jason Scott is definitely one of those. And there are others out there, I mean, that aren't even related to retail that we've been paired up with. And
yeah,
I've just been honored that we were even on some of those lists.
Yes. So thank you. Thank you for helping.
Thank you, our listeners.
Make that a success. So, okay. We have been prognosticating. We've been foretelling the future for some time. And Brian takes the award for the most things predicted this year. with the top two on our list, Brian called both of them. So Brian, I'll let you have the honor of tooting your own horn.
Oh man, no, I don't need
okay,
that.
Okay, I'll do it for you.
This horn.
Brian himself, about 20 episodes before it happened, called the Whole Foods acquisition by Amazon, which was a bombshell of news. That sort of rocked retail. And then we had Body Labs on the show, which was back at episode 29. Body Labs is a VC-backed startup that was doing really interesting work in the realm of body data and caught Brian's eye just a little while ago. We had
episode 8.
Yeah.
Episode 8, man. Yeah. We were talking about it back then.
Yeah. And I know that what I wanted to do for this show is go back and find every time that you said body data, because you always say like body data. But I didn't get that done in time. However, we did, we did have Body Labs on the show, and you called it just after that episode aired that they would be acquired by Amazon as well. And lo and behold, just within the last month or two, that's also happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I actually met them at the first Shop Talk.
Wow.
That's where I met.
Wow. Yeah.
Will Ferrell. And I was really surprised to run into him too, because I had been thinking about what was ahead for body data in general. Earlier that year. So this would have been, what year would this have been?
2015.
Yeah, 2015. Because I was talking about this at Imagine 2015. Yeah. Anyway, meeting Bill Ferrell at Shop Talk, at the first Shop Talk, was really a bit of a stroke of luck. Just kind of bumped into him. He was talking to Magento about something. I don't even know why. And I ran into him right in front of the Magento booth. So pretty cool stuff to run into people that things you're already thinking about, and then to see it all, you know, happen out there in the wild, and then really to be able to track and follow and really observe the success of Body Labs has been really exciting for me. Personally.
Yeah. And
I think
we keep seeing all of these types of technologies, the ones that we covered for the first 5 or 8 episodes, which was sort of us setting up your introduction into what we felt like were the coming wave of retail tech innovation. And that kicked off in 2016. And then we saw that all mature, and a good portion of that, came to pass even with our partnership with Link. Link Global actually helped us for the first 6 months, partnered with us to help us bring the podcast to a larger audience. And they've made some amazing strides in application of artificial intelligence to conversational commerce.
Yeah, definitely. Also, right after we started recording the show, Pokemon Go came out. And
wow, yeah.
I mean, we recognized that, I think was episode 4 or 5, as a sea change moment for how people are going to interact with the virtual world. And I can't remember how much we talked about augmented reality and virtual reality before then, but from there on out,
that was like the cornerstone of our show from there on. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I was made a true believer. If you want to go back to the world that we lived in 50 episodes ago, there was no Snapchat spectacles, right? Snap was not a public company, right? There, Whole Foods was still its own standalone company. Google's home device was not yet a public acquisition, or it wasn't a public product yet. It was only just announced. And Pokemon Go didn't even exist. That's the world that just a year ago existed. And that's the world
that's
we lived
crazy.
In.
This is, and I think this is why we started the show, because we recognized that a lot of technologies were coming together and we were just about to experience the new wave of innovation. And we were too excited not to talk. Like, we had to talk about it.
And it's not just that it's moving fast. It's moving faster than ever. And so our new tagline that I'm liking to throw around is that retail tech moves fast, but future commerce is moving faster.
I think we might have to start using that instead of keep looking towards the future.
I know that maybe that's our new one for this year. But if you look at some of the ones that we've also spoken about there, we're seeing huge strides as well. We introduced the concept of passive commerce to you in the early episodes and wouldn't you know, we actually, there was a study that was released and, just, you know, not even 6 months ago that said that passive commerce is the means of marketing, consumer packaged goods. And getting people to try and experiment with other brands that they already have some brand affinity toward. We're seeing actual data starting to prove out the theories that we've had for many years. And it's exciting for us to sort of be at the forefront of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, you look at, you mentioned Google Home, but we've also talked about Amazon quite a bit on this show.
Oh gosh, yes.
I think, you know, we've definitely, I mean, talk about body data, you know, and then seeing it show up in a big company. And well, first with the Echo look, when that came out, that was a really good indication that we were on the right track. And then to have Amazon go acquire Body Data or Body Labs, you know, I think I wonder if Jeff Bezos is listening to the show, because it feels like we've kind of, I mean, we didn't start before the Amazon Echo was released. Although I did subscribe within the first week to get one.
You're an early adopter, if nothing else. That's for sure.
I am not an early adopter, but I saw that and I was like, dude, this is it. I think what we've been able to do with the show is really like recognize that this is what's next, and then really start to look ahead and explore all the different possibilities with voice commerce and conversational commerce.
Yeah.
Now Starbucks has their own conversational app. I mean, they hired someone just like away from, I shouldn't quote me on this, but they hired someone away from Microsoft, I think it was, just so that they could build out like conversational interfaces. And that I think is just a really good indication that conversational commerce is going to continue to be something big.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether that be post-purchase or pre-purchase, like it's really still gaining traction. And I think it might be one of those technologies that, you know, we've talked about how, you know, it kind of went dormant for a little while, and 2016 was supposed to be the year of conversational commerce. Really, it was more like the year of hype about conversational commerce.
I have to hand it to one of our first guests. When I broached the topic of conversational commerce for the first time, I did so sort of knowing that, I was probably setting myself up, but we had the head of Neiman Marcus Retail Innovation Lab,
Scott Evans,
and we had him on, and I said, "What do you think of conversational?" And he said, "I think that it's this year's beacons." And wouldn't you know, he was 100% right in that it was a fad, and it's something that we're.
Let's talk about this for a second. I don't think that conversational is a fad.
I don't think it is either. But it's so overhyped, and it's
kind of like VR had been for a while. Sure. Like VR got super overhyped.
Sure.
And then everyone realized, oh wait, there's still a ways to go. Like it's getting close, but like we kind of have to sit on this, and like we put a lot of money into this, but it wasn't really quite ready, but it will be in like 5 years or so. And I feel like conversational kind of hit the same thing where it's like, this is definitely something that's happening and it's something that we should be involved in, but it's, you know, we're going to have to kind of wait for it to develop a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, when it first started, people were making all kinds of ridiculous bots like DrakeBot. I don't know if you remember DrakeBot.
How can I forget DrakeBot?
And so it was just like this explosion of content and of experimentation and like, wow, like this is so cool. Like imagine all the possibilities. And then, for sure. And then they're like, oh wait, like we have to work at this. Like that's money.
Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is used by thousands of marketers around the world. It has quick and easy campaign creation with a world-class intuitive interface. The DotMailer team is always on hand from email creation, creative, and delivery to dedicated consultancy helping you build your own success story. DotMailer is built to play well with others. You can build your own marketing cloud by extending DotMailer or integrating it with your existing e-commerce and business platforms. Become a smarter, faster, better marketer and create sophisticated and measurable campaigns with DotMailer. Go to dotmailer.com/futurecommerce to start your free trial today and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off DotMailer packages. Thanks again to DotMailer for supporting Future Commerce. And one thing that we've done with this show reaching a broad audience is we've had guests from all walks of life, like you said, very diverse backgrounds.
Yes.
But our listeners are just as diverse. We have our second largest market in this show is in Japan.
Yes.
And we have listeners all over the world. We have people listening in Argentina, in Brazil, South Africa, Australia, in India, in Pakistan, Iran, like even
UK.
Even Spain and all over the United Kingdom and in the Nordics and even in Iceland and one lonely listener who listens all the time in Mongolia. So thank you for listening. It's just an incredible. It's an incredible worldwide audience who is very engaged in making very strategic decisions about the kinds of retail tech that they'll be employing in the very near future and using Future Commerce to do it. And you know what? Don't take our word for it. We have some of the brightest minds who have been on our show to help us bring that message to you. And so let's actually take a second and hear from them. Who are some of your favorite guests that we've had, and what kind of things do you think?
Let's start with one of our most popular guests, actually our most popular guest of all time.
Yeah.
Because, and honestly, for good reason, he did some amazing things at Adidas. Nick Vu, took a massive organization like Adidas, which I mean, I don't know if you've seen Under Armour and Nike's recent news about how well they're performing. Under Armour's in real trouble. Nike, I mean, obviously is still a very profitable organization, but they expected this growth, this insane growth. And there was just an article recently that I was reading, I wish I had it with me right now, where they actually, it's, you know, the past 2 years have not been what they expected. And it's largely due to what Adidas has done. In North America. And Nick Vu was a big part of that, of that movement of bringing Adidas back into relevance. And so he unveiled some of his secrets. He really, pulled back the curtain and let us look a little bit behind the scenes on how he did some of that. It was really, really intelligent, really, really kind of him to be so transparent as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, let's take a listen to Nick Vu as he tells us how you need to tailor your approach to bringing innovation into your organization based on culture and size.
Honestly, how different is, TaylorMade to an Adidas retail experience, and what is, what do you think is the difference, and how can that help, merchants that are listening to the show or retailers listening to the show to forge their own strategies?
Yeah, it's a very astute question. Here's my response. And I'm going to give you an analogy that I was on another call, and I think they are going to steal this, and I welcome our audience and yourselves to steal this too. I think each brand is different. And my analogy would be if Adidas is the mature organization, we're probably more like, with respect to processes, systems, technology, more like a tugboat, a large freighter, if you will. Mm-hmm. If you look at Reebok, similar situation, just maybe a smaller tugboat. But when you look at like a Mitchell and Ness going to the other opposite end, I would consider that analogy to be a speedboat, right? And then here's the punchline. If you look at our e-com businesses in that industry, it's really like a jet ski. And so, you know, as a potential driver rider in this analogy, you really have to deploy strategies that fit the speed of which the businesses are moving. And so from my vantage point, when I look at the different brands, the lens I have to put on before I get on one of those ships or vehicles is, wow, if I'm dealing with an e-com topic, depending on the brand, I got to know that I'm riding on a 70-mile-an-hour jet ski. You know what I mean? As opposed to implementing technologies on a mature business, that may be much more like big freighter speedboat, big freighter tugboat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that was great advice. And not every organization is Adidas, right?
Yeah, dude. That I mean, my talk that I gave at Meet Magenta New York just this past month is pretty much all about this exact topic, and I really need to bring that quote in because it's a great quote.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think too, if you sort of scale that up into what rapid innovation looks like, you know, we had an incredible example of that from the Lowe's Innovation Lab.
And
here it is.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So, you know, going back to the narrative where we started, this really came out of a story around how could we use technology to enable people with superpowers. And you look at things like Iron Man, of course, and you think like, well, how do we make that possible? And so with the exosuit, it's a soft robotic suit, which I think, you know, not a lot of people would look at that and immediately think robot. But it's helping our stock loader employees in the stores. We're doing this right now at one store that's near Virginia Tech, who is our development partner on the project. And these are employees who are doing things like lifting 5-gallon buckets of paint or heavy bags of cement. And for hours on end, at every shift, they're moving stuff around the store and it's really hard on your body. And so with the exosuit, you know, it acts similar to a bow and arrow to absorb your energy. And so that essentially it feels like when you're lifting something, it's weightless. And so far the employees have really been excited about it. I mean, you can put it on and try it and you will immediately notice how helpful it is. And so we're definitely excited to look at.
Wow. Exosuits.
So cool. That was really fun to hear about.
Exosuits. The thing about exosuits though, and that was Amanda Manna there from the Lowe's Innovation Lab speaking, is that, it's not just enough to pilot it. It's that you have to be, she goes on to say, you have to be very smart when you do pilot something that you don't sort of drink your own Kool-Aid to say that it was successful, but, you know, apply some really rigorous testing, in a very small, and targeted way, and slowly roll it out to the larger organization to see if your hypotheses are true. And I felt like that was, even though we're talking about exosuits, yep. That was a really healthy bit of advice that we could all follow.
Yeah. You've got stuff like that juxtaposed against someone like Sukarita Mulpuru, right? Who is like, you know, I mean, and I would say that Amanda would totally agree with this. It's probably not really a juxtaposition, but it's just, I think it's really tempered. Like you get really excited about exosuits, and then you have Sukarita come along and say something like what she said in episode 41 once you roll that.
So much of what I see is technology for technology's sake. And, you know, like, for instance, I was talking to a retailer last week and they were like, kind of probing me on, don't I need Apple Pay? Isn't it really, really important that I invest in Apple Pay? I'm like, nobody's using Apple Pay yet. It's just not necessary. And it's a pain for you to integrate. So why are you obsessed with Apple Pay? Why are you not obsessed, for instance, with getting a marketplace on your website? And, you know, kind of those are the things that are baffling to me. Like retailers want to compete with Amazon and they do everything that they put all these like reviews on their website. They try desperately to offer free shipping. You know, they're trying to get better at their, you know, kind of fulfillment processes. And it's like, you know, you're trying to run against Usain Bolt. You know, I mean, it just is, you know, a little bit of a fool's errand. However, you know, as I'd mentioned, there are like 700, you know, what, 500 million, 700 million product, whatever the number is, it's hundreds of billions of products on Amazon.com. And the vast majority of them people never see. However, on your own website, there are a number of products that consumers are searching for that they never find. The number of null searches on any retailer's website is usually 20 to 30% of their searches.
Yes.
But what are retailers doing about that?
Nothing.
And it's like, the easiest thing to do is put on a marketplace, which, by the way, is the exact thing that is driving Amazon's success right now. And all it is letting other sellers who do sell the products that people are searching for, putting them on your website and letting other people buy it on your website. And you send the order to somebody else so that they actually transact it. And it's baffling to me why retailers have not actually embraced, you know, something as basic as that. Or when they do, like in the cases of Walmart or Sears, they don't do it well. You know, I shared the example of Jet.com earlier where, you know, they sent me the wrong item, you know.
And in that particular interview, she really rails on Jet and then the user experience that she had there, which she felt like was sort of substandard. But you can tell the passion in her voice of how convinced she is that it, even though we're telling people of what it is that we should be thinking about for the far future, there's people that are so focused on and over leveraged on trying to do those types of things that they're forgetting to focus on what customers want today.
Yeah, that's so good. Although, I mean, if you compare what Sukrit was saying with what Zaku Panathiratne said back in episode 16, I like that's almost that a little bit at odds with each other as well. I love how like well, go ahead and play that. We can talk about this a little more.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess to answer your question, it obviously depends a lot on who the merchant is. I can definitely see AR and VR being reserved for like the most, you know, personalized, customized niche industries, niche high-end industries. I don't know. I think there's also that general, you know, Andreessen Horowitz's software is eating the world theory, which means that, you know, pretty much technology is just really important and it's just eating into every industry. And so it might be that the answer is just you have to go for all of them. Like tech is just central to a lot of businesses these days and you can't really skimp out on it. But I mean, obviously it depends on who you are.
So you're saying that maybe, you know, if you don't have the budget to invest in different technologies, that really, maybe you shouldn't be in business.
Well, not saying that explicitly, but
I mean, technically, you said that, Brian. She didn't.
I mean, I think that's an interesting point. Like, maybe you really need to have the funding and the budget to go invest in some of these technologies, or like, it's not just technology for technology's sake. It's technology because you need it.
because fundamentally, for you to operate a business, a digital business, you need money, you need capital, you need to invest in. And what we're forgetting is, I love this idea that we've been kicking around recently, which is that, 5 years ago, we used to call responsive websites the mobile web, right? And now, because 90% of your visitors are coming from mobile, we just call it the web, right? It's just the web. And at the end of the day, that's really what we're talking about here, is that these all these technology things that we're doing 10, 20 years ago were so futuristic, but it is commerce today. That is what commerce is. And so for you to be in commerce, you need to invest in tech.
I think you've said this a couple times, but you're like, you know, I think this is a good quote from you, and I can't remember if you stole this from someone else or not. But
no, this was entirely original, Brian.
This is good. you know, which is basically, in the future, we're not going to call augmented reality. We're just going to call it using our phone or whatever the device it is that we're using it on.
Yeah.
It's just going to be using that device, and it's just going to be a natural part of it. It's not going to be like, oh, now we're using augmented reality, this technology that we know that people spend a lot of money to make.
Right. Yeah. No, that's just what my phone does. My phone is just this window into this other world. That's a duh. That's what a phone does. My daughter she earned a dollar, and we went to the dollar store because she likes to go to the dollar store. And she was sitting there, and she was very carefully considering a purchase. She was holding in one hand a snow globe and in the other hand a calculator. And she had never seen a calculator before, and she could not believe that a device, you could put 4 + 4 and it would tell her the answers to her homework. And she could not believe that. And she's like, I don't need the snow globe. I like it. It's cool, but it doesn't have it's not as amazing as the calculator, which is blowing her 6-year-old mind. And I think that, you know, we forget that these things, the calculator was the biggest breakthrough in business machines and in business technology about 50 years ago. It changed the course of tech adoption in business.
Oh my gosh, that was only 50 years ago, man. Like,
yeah, and that's where we are now. And, you know, now a calculator is this primitive device. It's a primitive tool. And so I find it really interesting.
TI 85 though.
Yeah, I know. Well, mine was the 83. I'll have you know. Yeah. But what an interesting change, and it's all been in such a short period of time, and that's why you need future commerce to help you sort of make sense of it all. We also, you know, we've had some incredible speakers and thinkers on the show, and including Fong Cheng from the company Link, who did provide us with amazing support for our first year, and she actually dove pretty deep into the way that they're attacking these futuristic technologies and making them into things that are useful and palatable for right now. Let's take a listen.
Where do we draw the line? What is the best user experience? A long story short of that is that we found it's very important to make it clear when it is a bot. You have to make it clear to the customer, I am a bot, right? Mm-hmm. And I can assist you on a number of things. And when we build the bots, a lot of times, like, the bots companies are tend to kind of build to say, hey, here's what we can do, what our bots can do. What it doesn't necessarily address is that you can't control, once you give a touch point to the consumer, you can't really limit how they interact with that touch point you present to them. So there will be many scenarios. Your bots, either it cannot really add value, and cannot actually provide this immediate results in the automated service he or she is expecting. When you build a platform or the bot's product, you have to consider how your bot's going to be respond or react when you understand this is outside of your automated service scope, right? You're telling your customer to say, you know, I can only help you on these things, and that's outside of my scope, and I give you some pointer to ways to get help. Or you have to find a unique way to bridge it to human, right? So it will be unrealistic to expect the bots from day one and can cover, you know, all the service request with immediate automated service results.
And that is sort of a really level-headed and down-to-earth sort of
dude, I totally agree. I was thinking the exact same thing. I was thinking like how, you know, I love how Fong takes something that's so future focused, so like next gen, and makes it sound so like practical.
Yeah. Like, of course we shouldn't expect that AI can do everything for us. And of course we should tell customers that, you know, they're interacting with a bot, that of course we should. That's because that's how we expect that's how they would expect the best customer service to be, is to just be open and transparent.
It's so no nonsense. And so like, yeah, this is just how you use this. Like you can leverage this really well. And here are the ground rules, and you just follow these rules. Like it's so like usable here and now.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is complete opposite to another guest of ours and his take on AI.
I'm seeing that right now in this moment, literally next couple of years, we're in that moment where we're starting to make the decisions of, in a sense, our own destruction, right? Everybody who thinks they have job security today, I don't care who you are, wake up, you don't have job security. I don't care. You're a programmer? Sorry, AI is going to replace you. I'm going to train my computer just by training it like a kid. Your job is done. All right. So don't think you have job security. Oh, you make electronics? No, no job security. Are you a lawyer? Sorry. Blockchain might replace yes. you. Just the blockchain. Yeah. Just the blockchain. All right. You're a doctor? No, sorry. A computer is going to do it better. A Watson. All right. Disconnected to a laser. And I don't have to go down there. Nobody has job security any longer. So stop being smug. Because everybody who hears this argument, it's like, oh, yeah. That coal miner that voted for Trump. Yeah, you know, so he's pissed off. No, everybody is going to be out of a job.
That is the best.
Yeah. And if you want more of that, there's about 2.5 hours of it from episodes 19 and 20. So
I wish we could release the pre-show. I got it. Oh my gosh, that pre-show was like ace. That was even better than the episode. Like, yeah, the episode was good. The pre-show was the best.
Yeah, and Brian Romilly, actually, who has way too many things that he's good at and prolific for, but he is profound in the area of pushing what he calls voice first, which is you know, this idea of voice being your gateway into a new realm of us understanding what computing is and how we interact with your voice as the interface, which I just thought was, you know, is
he runs
just
great. A multiplex, right? Multiplex.com yeah. or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
yeah. It's incredible. And it's funny because we, you know, just kind of stringing that along, why do we use voice, you know? Why do we use voice as why is that sort of a new frontier for us? It's a natural interface, you know, typing and into a computer was just a means to an end, but voice is the next platform. And we actually spoke with Jason L. Baptiste about something very similar to that.
Like I would argue that, you know, that actually voice interfaces are going to be a large part of how we interact with technology in the future. It's just we're in an awkward phase right now because we're not used to it. It's not something we see every day. It's not, and we don't feel it around us. Hmm. It'd take another generation of users before that gets normal.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, so it's my wife's little brother. He is 10, 11 years old. He uses Siri all the time. Like, he has a little iPhone, and all he does is use Siri. And I think his response is like, it's fun. That could be where the world is going. And I think fun is a key thing. Like, the reason Snapchat is so successful is they're just fun. Like, a big problem that I have with Silicon Valley is, like, a lot of it's just dry and not fun. And I think Snapchat was smart to go in LA, and they do stuff right. That's fun. And that's been missing from products for a bit.
And that's kind of what it all comes down to, right, Brian, is that products have to be fun and engaging and make our lives better for us to actually want to interact with them.
Yeah, that's so true. Fun, engaging, entertaining. I mean, I think there's whispers even now among retail that 2018 is going to be the year of entertainment.
Yeah.
And that is to say that, you know, customers are going to purchase because they want to go enjoy an experience, enjoy, you know, be entertained by you as a retailer. Retailers are going to use entertainment to draw customers in new ways, and dazzle them. And, we've talked about this quite a bit, actually back in the Amber Armstrong episode about Gen Z. They do like shopping in stores, but
yeah,
they expect a completely new paradigm when they go in the store. They want to be dazzled. They want to have that brand interact with them in totally new ways. So I think that, you know, we talked about this almost a year ago. This is going to become a much bigger trend and a bigger topic for discussion this coming year.
50 episodes we've been telling you to just make better products and make your in-store experiences more entertaining and make them experiences, not racks of clothes and accoutrement just piled high to the ceiling like a TJ Maxx, you know, going out of business sale. What people want is to walk into a store and be, you know, jaw agape at the experience that you've put in front of them. And,
hold it's on our, here.
Yeah.
Don't knock TJ Maxx, man.
Are you a Maxinista?
No, I'm not a Maxinista, but there is a whole group of shoppers out there that love the experience and the entertainment of the hunt.
That is an experience.
It is an experience. So it's just
that in and of itself is an experience. Okay. I stand corrected. Yes. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
But Sears, on the other hand, no hunt there. That is the death of retail. It just announced Sears and JCPenney's closing another round of stores. So, I'm sorry. Sears and Kmart. What am I saying?
Yeah. Rest in pieces. And actually, you know, so getting down to, we're kind of winding down this retrospective, and there's a couple standout interviews for us that sort of are on opposite ends of the spectrum of extreme innovation and extreme ingenuity. And so let's take a listen to some of the folks from Body Labs tell us a little bit about how they've approached using their products in a way that in applying their products into new and unexpected ways.
You know, when you look at online retail specifically, you know, a lot of these other industries have been disrupted by e-commerce, but retail or clothing retail has had a harder time being able to get into that e-commerce space in a meaningful way. And part of the challenge has always been that you really can't try anything on or validate that something's going to fit properly. And so if you could easily provide businesses with the 3D shape of that consumer, and you could do it in an efficient and easy manner from something like a web camera or an uploaded photo from an existing user profile, you could unlock this whole other realm of both shape-based analytics, size recommendations. In the future, you could do things like virtual try-on. And that's actually a combination of both recognizing pose, motion, and shape. So it's really taking kind of the three pillars and focus areas of our technology and uniting them together to be able to do something really special. And so there's all these other verticals that can get easily disrupted.
Yeah. And you take an existing piece of tech, and there are limitless ways of applying that to retail.
Yeah. And Amazon's going to be the one to do it.
Spoiler alert.
They own that now.
Man.
I can't wait for our predictions show. No predictions this show, but I can't wait for our predictions show for 2018.
It's going to be, 2018 is going to be wild. We've somehow accidentally wound up with giving the last word to Caleb Light of Power Practical, who basically is making a career on Amazon right now, making a brand that takes new and interesting products into the market and brings them to consumers, and creating a brand around what would, you know, that sort of span the gamut, like what Body Labs was saying, which is finding new application for old tech, but also not everything has to be this super high tech moonshot. Let's take a listen.
You know, you're not taking a pot and making electricity necessarily with every product. And honestly, sometimes those super kind of innovative products don't sell that well, or the market isn't as big as something like an LED strip light that you put on the back of your television, for example, right?
Right, right.
So even if you don't have necessarily like these super heavy tech products, you can still think of ways of kind of bundling it or packaging it so that you make a clean experience so that someone wants to come back to your brand to buy whatever is new.
There it is.
Great way to end those clips. And honestly, like Caleb Light, if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen, because guys like that are the future. They're the future of retail.
Yeah. They are the future.
They're going to be leading the big brands ahead. If you want to hire somebody that's going to do that, go hire that guy.
Yeah, Caleb's interesting because he is the new omnichannel, in that he's embraced Amazon as a strategic partner. He's doing it in very interesting ways as part of Amazon exclusives. And he's kind of leading the charge. He was very successful on Kickstarter. He's done direct to consumer through, you know, a direct to consumer branded portal for years, and created a successful brand, you know, selling interesting products. But he's hitting on every cylinder. In fact, Caleb is the kind of person that embodies what future commerce is all about.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a person who is taking all of the tools available to him and maximizing them for his success in business.
Yeah. I think what he's doing also is he's being really resourceful. And I think that's something that's going to be really important for retailers coming up, is when things are moving so quickly that things that used to work aren't going to work before. Caleb tried to go that standard, get our product into REI and, you know, on physical shelves route initially. And he wasn't picking up traction. And so he and his team got creative about how they were going to go about, you know, go to market and, or go back to market and, or, you know, find new channels for selling. And so I think what you're going to have to do, new retail, rebuilt retail is going to constantly have to be poking and prodding at new things or new ways of doing things. They're going to have to be experimenters and really people who understand how to interpret even probably smaller sets of data in shorter time periods and be able to come away with meaningful insights that direct their business. So look for those kinds of people that can do that kind of thing. Like Caleb, guys like Jacob Matson. I really wish we had a quote from him
here.
That was one of my favorite interviews, no doubt.
Sure.
And others like them that are ready to adjust and to look to what's next and have ways of being able to tell whether or not they're doing well. And I don't know.
Even have half of our guests on the show, and I'm really proud of the alumni of Future Commerce. And you know what I would say is, don't even go look for people like Caleb Light. You can become Caleb Light.
Yes.
And so our little plug is, hey, the best way to do that is to join FC Insiders, which is your way of getting what's new and what's next, and sort of our detailed analysis and some of that behind the scenes.
Oh, I'm just realizing now there's an episode we haven't even published yet as we're recording this, but
oh, along with
Daniel Sepulveda. He actually echoes this exact thing we're just talking about training entrepreneurs. And like how have people really know how to take ownership and find new ways of doing things. And really, you know, that's actually a main theme of what he talks about in that episode.
Yeah. And if you're new around Future Commerce Parts, you can expect more of the same in the future. We're going to grow. We're going to repackage it in a bunch of different ways. But you can expect more thoughtful insights, great interviews, some thought leadership, and together we're going to build a community of retail futurists to help us bring tomorrow into today.
The future's moving fast.
But future commerce is moving faster. Thank you for listening to Future Commerce. We want to give you all the props for hanging in for today's show, and we want your feedback about it. So make sure to go to futurecommerce.fm and hit up that discuss comment box on the website. If you're not subscribed, get subscribed today on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review, and you can subscribe on anywhere that you can get podcasts, including Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or from your Amazon Echo with the phrase "Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcast." Whew. Here's to 50 episodes, my friend.
50 more.
All right. Have a good one, and we'll see you in the future.